You're listening to the UCB Long Form Conversations podcast, in-depth conversations with performers and teachers from the best alternative comedy theater on the planet. This podcast is modeled on the improv form Laurent, so the guest of our last episode becomes the host of this episode, and today's guest will become the host of our next episode. The opinions expressed in this episode are those of the comedians talking and don't necessarily reflect the opinions of UCB Theater or Training Center.
Warning. What you're about to hear is an extremely nerdy conversation about long-form improv comedy.
Welcome to the Long Form Conversations podcast. From New York City, I'm John Wan. I was a guest on a previous episode, but today I'm back as your host for another round of our ongoing Laurent. Today, my guest is none other than Matt Starr, who improv fans might know from the Herald Team Mermaids. He was also a writer-performer for Above Average, and he was also a UCB Torco alum. Please welcome to the podcast, Matt Starr.
Oh, my gosh. Thank you. Hi, John.
Hi, Matt. How
are
you?
That was great. You were really good.
Thank you. You know, I really tried to channel everyone from NPR.
You nailed it. I was about to say, you sounded like just like an NPR podcast.
Thank you. Thank you so much. I mean, sometimes in the shower, I narrate my own existence as the girl from the woman who did Serial.
Uh-huh. Sarah Koenig?
Yeah. I was washing my shelf and then... Anyway, this is not about me. Mm-hmm. It's about you. And I'm so happy to be here with you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I'm so excited to be here too. Yeah.
Yes. Let's just dive right in.
Cool.
You know, this is a quintessential question that everyone is asked and is such a great starting point. But what brought you to improv?
To improv?
And how many years ago?
Wow, to improv. So I was one of those kids in, like, high school and whatnot that, like, knew he wanted to do comedy. And, like, every school project, I would try to, like, write stand-up jokes and do a Conan impression and stuff like that. And so I thought I wanted to do stand-up, and then I moved to Columbus for college, Columbus, Ohio. And the stand-up scene was just kind of, like, a drag. But on the very first day of college, I saw the college improv group perform. They were, like, performing for I was an orientation leader, and so they did, like, a small performance. And I looked at that, and I was like, oh, wow, that's exactly what I want to be doing. So I auditioned and got in. And so I've been doing improv since I was 18, yeah.
You auditioned for a college group?
Yeah.
Yeah. And so you saw the UCB tour group come to your college?
So that was later. I'm from a small town in Ohio,
yeah.
And I really wanted to move to New York City, mm-hmm. And I really wanted to go to Columbia.
That's a story I've never heard before. small town in the big
small
city.
Small town boy wants just to move to... I think I was the first, yeah.
Oh, my God. So guys, we have the first small town mm-hmm. resident moving to the big city.
Getting roasted here on the UCB Long Forms podcast. I wanted to move here, but my dad's from Long Island, so my cousin Rebecca lived in New York, mm-hmm. and she was like, you have to go to this place. It's in the basement of a grocery store.
never gets old.
Yeah, you have to go to this place. And so we went and she took us to a show. It was called Mother. We saw Mother, the soundtrack. Mm-hmm. And the thing that stuck with me was that I've looked this up, like, the calendar is still on the website, or it was still on the Chelsea website, so I figured out, like, what the exact day was and all of that, mm-hmm. That Dimitri Martin, the stand-up, had been doing a show at UCB at the time,
yes.
And I saw him walking up the stairs as I was walking down the stairs,
yes.
And he was my absolute favorite, and I was like, oh, wow, what is this place? And then I saw Mother and saw Mantzoukas and John Daly and Doug Moe and all those, and Jesse Falcon and all those great people perform, and then walked out of the theater, and then, like...
Kool-Aid within you.
No.
No.
And then completely forgot UCB existed other than I saw Dimitri Martin at some weird place in New York City. And then I went and then I started doing improv. And then a year later, UCB's touring company came and it was Charlie Todd and Lennon Parham and Joe Wengert and Chad Carter and Eli Newell. Came to Ohio State, and they were on a weird branded tour for not Febreze, but for a competitor of Febreze.
Oh, a competitor of Febreze.
No, maybe they were. Maybe it was Febreze. It was Febreze. Yeah, it was
that
a branded tour.
That is so funny.
And I was all of 18 or 19. I remember looking at Charlie Todd and being like, you do this for work, Mr. Todd? And he was like, yeah, I guess you could say that.
And now we know.
And then from then on, like, Torco would come every year, mm-hmm. and that's, in Ohio, like, you kind of choose if you're a comedy nerd, if you're going to move to Chicago or New York, and getting to meet all of the great people who came on UCB's touring company was what sold me on moving to New York.
Then you drank the Kool-Aid.
Then I drank the Kool-Aid very hard, yeah.
Wow. Mm-hmm. That is, yeah, that's such a great origin story. And so you moved to New York. When did you move to New York?
So I moved to New York for the first time in the summer of 2008 because I was doing an internship at The Daily Show.
Wow. Congratulations.
Oh, my gosh. It was huge. What a big moment for me. And I took Sketch 101 with Dominic Dyrkus.
So you started with Sketch.
I did. I figured at the time, and this is me being like, I'm a very type A person, and I like was very of the mindset that if I didn't try very hard to work in comedy, that I would never make it out of Ohio. And so I was like doing improv, like there was 4 levels of improv at the time. There was only 2 levels of sketch. And I feel like I can write on my own anywhere, but like I can't do UCB improv back in Columbus. So if I take a sketch class, I can at least learn that. And I continue to write in Columbus when I move back after the summer. The summer internship was done the summer. I saw a bunch of shows, but mostly I just went and I would see Ruben Williams and Mother every Saturday night. Sorry, Kevin Hines, if I got that wrong.
We're sorry, Kevin Hines.
I don't think he was even on that team yet, but still, the date would be wrong. I would go see that show, and then I've like looked back at the shows that I was missing just because I was like a snotty 20-year-old or whatever, right, being like, if they're not on the weekend, I don't want to see that. And then you look back at like, it was Flond and like Donald Glover doing his show and like Ellie Kemper doing her show. I saw Lennon Parham's show twice, which was like my favorite show of all time, yeah. You just look at the calendar at like all the things that I was missing that there's no excuse that I wasn't here every night.
Right. And okay, whoa, that's great. I mean, you were coming to the theater when a lot of like hot names now were right here in the theater. Mm-hmm. And what was it like? What was sketch like in the beginning? Well, you kind of said you knew how to write on your own, or you had been doing that. So did you feel very comfortable in sketch, or what was it like getting a more academic focus?
I remember, so I was living on the Upper East Side with my friend Drew, who still does comedy stuff. And he and I were in the class together. And I remember, like, I was so stressed out in the Sketch 101 class. Like, I was, like, wandering around the streets of the Upper East Side, like, I don't have a sketch idea. It's supposed to be, like, a topical sketch or, like, a commercial parody. And I was just, like, beating my head like I was, like, the Catcher in the Rye or something like that.
And do you remember any of your, like, beginning, very first sketch ideas?
I do. One of them, the commercial parody I remember was, like, I remember 2 of them, and they're both pretty bad. One of them was called Magna Knife. It was a knife that's sharp enough to cut through cutting boards. And then
it's not bad.
And then the other one was like, it was pretty much like Chill Lawyer was the other one. His name was like Rivers Casablancas, and he was just like a chill dude who was also a lawyer. It was not a very strong game. But yeah, I started taking improv the second time I moved back to New York.
Okay.
That was for a different internship. That was at Letterman, at The Late Show with David Letterman. And then I started taking improv classes and then got into sketch classes. So I, within the first year, made it through the sketch program, made it through the improv curriculum, advanced study, and then made a mod team at the end of 2010, beginning of 2011, and then made Herald for the first time in, like, fall of 2011.
Matt, superstar.
I was way too young to be doing that.
So did you feel, like, compelled once you started improv to get through all the classes?
Yes.
Yeah.
I was 22, and I was like, time is running out.
Yeah. And how do you feel about that, looking back?
It was bad. It's bad to do that. It took... I feel like because like I was in a class, so I was in parentheses, the Chris Gethard's ASP, right? So I was in parentheses, and at that point, I think I maybe am 23, but still, I'm 23. And then there's Connor Ratliff is also in the class, and he has had this whole wealth of life experience, and Even though we've been doing improv for like kind of a similar amount of time at that point, he's just clearly superior to me in every way because he's had this whole world of life experience behind him. And that's true for everybody who's in that class. Don Finelli, Catherine Mudon, Phil Jackson, everybody who's in that class. There's 27 people in the class. I'm sorry.
Please list all of them.
Yeah. I'm sorry, everybody in parentheses. Everybody is great in there. And because I'm so young at it, you're just at a disadvantage because you don't know how people behave. You don't know how life works yet.
I think that kind of opens up a really interesting topic in classes and life experience. Because I know a lot of students who might be listening to this just starting out improv, they might feel that kind of like compulsion to like, oh man, I want to really get good at this. I want to keep taking classes. So what is so important about life experience?
I mean, essentially, I was somebody who, since the time he was 16, had been like studying comedy and been like, and so I feel like a pretty decent grasp of game and like, oh, I understand how scenes work and how to make things funny. And I was a sketch writer already. And on paper, it's like, oh, I understand how to make a game and how to find a pattern and point out what's unusual. But like, I hadn't hardly dated anybody, like, or the person I had dated in college was like also an improv person. And so like all I was creating was based on comedy and other improv rather than being like, hey, in college, I probably should have like gone to London or like or
anywhere,
had experiences. I should have had experiences rather than being like, if I don't do this, then I will never get out. But I think, like, for students now who are, like, trying to just shotgun all the classes and whatnot, I think that's great. I think you totally can. But also, like, go to a museum every once in a while. Go date somebody that you shouldn't date. Go have life experiences so that when you're in your scenes are richer because of it.
And when you were coming up in the classes, was there ever a time, either in a particular class or maybe, I guess, in your life where you felt like, I'm really confused about this, or this is a big learning point for me.
So the biggest learning point for me was when I got cut from Harold Knight, the first time, the only time, I suppose. Yeah.
And so which Harold team did you get cut from?
So I had made Deckard, and then Deckard got broken up, and then I was on Johnny Romance, and then Johnny Romance didn't get broken up. They cut three of us from it, and then I think they stayed Johnny Romance for a minute, but then became Sherlock and Cookies.
Okay.
And it was it was devastating. It's just like a devastating moment where like family members are calling and telling you like, well, maybe you're not very good at this and you should go to law school. And it really like.
Law is a theme in your life right now.
Yeah.
Did you consider being a lawyer?
I did for like a week.
Okay.
And then I job shadowed one and they seemed really sad.
Okay, sorry. This is a sidebar. Mm-hmm.
Also a law term, sidebar.
Sidebar. Is it?
I guess. I don't know. I'm not one.
So you got cut. This is, I mean, it is really, I've also have read other people's experiences of when they got cut from teams. Or also getting cut from anything that you put so much.
Right.
I mean, you clearly have put so much of this on a pedestal, kind of.
Yes.
And put so much of your life and your ambition directed towards this, and to get cut from it, what did it feel like, and what did you realize in that time not being on a team?
So I was a pretty anarchic player at the time, as far as improv goes. Like, I would create more chaos on stage than I would answer questions. And even though it's not necessarily, like, not funny, it's not useful as a teammate to your friends, to your people who are trying to support you on stage. I remember because Nate Dern was AD at the time, and he's the one who cut me. And I was the right person to cut looking back. Like, he made the right choice. And also, it was a great learning experience, although, like, a hard learned one. Like, it was a lot of very stressful things. But there would be, like, a moment that I remember that got me cut. The moment that got me cut, I guess, was I was on stage with Lauren Adams, who's unbelievable. And it's like, Lauren Adams is going to make anybody look good. And she said something to the effect of, like, you're in my home. And then I, like, pretty hard negated her and was like, I'm your husband. Like, you're dumb. You didn't realize that. And it was just, like, a complete rug pull move that got a laugh. But it still was, like, she was setting up and she was offering me a gift. And by except by like I recognized the gift, but I was purposefully batting it down because I thought that's what was funny at the time. And it just isn't a useful way to do improv. And it's something that I find a lot of very young people do, and especially people who do improv in college do, because like you're going for the laugh rather than like trying to make the Herald better or trying to help your teammates. Mm-hmm. And it was something that I was pretty guilty of at the time.
Let's talk about that a little bit. Like noticing what you think is funny, mm-hmm. and like doing things, because I think a lot of early improvisers think about this. They think, oh, well, I think that's funny. I think I should do that. Shouldn't I be honoring what I think is fun? And maybe, I mean, you've coached a ton too as well.
Right.
Let me talk about that, like when you think something is funny, and how the source of it can be different.
I think Neil Casey used to say something to the effect of, like, our goal when we do improv isn't just to be funny. Like, his quote of it was, like, if we were just trying to make people laugh, all we would do is just run around stage, slap each other, and say, dicks and tits, is what Neil Casey would say.
Well, I'm laughing. I'm laughing.
It's just funny. Like, yeah.
It's a funny image.
But he's like, but we're not. We're trying to create theater. And so funny can't be the only metric that you're using when you're making moves of like, yeah, there's lots of things that are funny. There's lots of things you could do on stage that are funny. But like what's funny and what satisfies that it's funny and also good for the show.
Mm-hmm.
And for me, that's something that took a long time to learn. And it's like I also, again, I'm a writerly person and like I have confidence in my ideas and whatnot. And it's about letting go of your own idea and having less ego of like, this is the idea that's going to be funny and being like, hey, that's the idea that we have. Let's play with that rather than those small changes of like, ooh, that's funny. But like, wouldn't it be funnier if this thing happened instead?
Right. Right. And I think also really living in those ideas truthfully too.
Mm-hmm.
Not just like rushing to complete the idea, but really exploring how people behave.
Absolutely.
Really like they would in a real life experience, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Absolutely.
So then you run on a team for a little bit. What did you do in that time in between? And then now you're back on a team. So
right.
Talk about that.
So I got cut from Herald Night and I was like, I'm going to take a little breather. I'm going to take a break. I'm going to go find.
What did you do?
Well, I took all of 3 weeks.
Oh, good.
That's all it lasted.
And
was,
in Matt Starland, I bet that's a long time.
It was. It was like the longest. It was like the first like break I'd taken from improv really since like I was 18. Mm-hmm. And that was a significant amount of time at that point. And then I went back to, it was when Grandma's Ashes was still running the Jam.
Oh, I love Grandma's Ashes.
Yeah, me too. Yeah. Grandma's Ashes was the team that was killing it on Herald Night when I first got on Herald Night, mm-hmm. and it was different then. Herald Night was just like five teams in one block, and so the anchor team would go fourth, and it was always Grandma's Ashes, and the team that was struggling the most would go fifth, and that was always my team, Deckard. And so Brandon Scott Jones and Drew Johnson and Josh Patton and Abra and Lydia would just get through just, like, slaying on stage. And then we would come out, and it was all of our first team. And it would just be like, yeah, what we do is different than, like, what I do on stage is different than what Brandon Scott Jones does on stage. That's still probably true.
Mm-hmm.
He's just a remarkably funny man.
Mm-hmm.
And I can tell, you could just kind of see on the audience's face how disappointed they were.
Oh, no.
That Grandma's Ashes was leaving.
Right. I mean, they have such a distinct energy.
Yeah.
And they work so well as a team,
mm-hmm.
that it's, I mean, I can imagine it's hard to follow.
It was. But so I took the time off then I went to the Jam, and Sypho was still DJing the Jam at the time and all of that. And this isn't bragging. I got on stage for my Jam set and like slayed. Just like had like the Jam set of my life was my first time back at improv. And like it just was the weirdest feeling of a reminder that you're good at this, but also being super frustrated because you just got cut. And to me,
yeah. Why do you think maybe that was the kind of performance you had that night?
Probably just because I was low and wasn't trying. Like, I wasn't thinking about it. I just wanted to go on stage and just do improv. Like, there wasn't a Herald around it. There wasn't anything.
Mm-hmm.
And because, like, it's hard when you're on a team, when you're on a house team, and you're playing with other people who are so good all the time.
Mm-hmm.
You kind of, even when you're doing great things, you start to forget that you're good at this. Because you're playing, like, cause everybody's good. And because you're not it's such a diminishing returns once you get to the upper levels of improv of, like, improvement and all of that, that, like, just because you're doing game-heavy scenes that are super funny but they're not perfect, like, you start to get noted and, like, you start to feel bad even though anywhere else in the country you're actually very, very talented at this thing. And that's true, for, I think, in class levels in general at UCB of, like, you're doing this with people who are serious about improv. And so it's very easy to start to get down on yourself because you're not making everybody laugh as much as that other person. But that other person is Don Finelli. And it's like,
right?
You know what I mean?
I think it kind of – we're kind of, like, have a recurring theme going. But, like, kind of brings back, like, just because – You're a master at game or understand the mechanics of comedy is doesn't mean that it doesn't make an improviser.
Right.
Right.
Yeah, it doesn't make an improviser. And also, like, you might still be remarkably funny. You might still be good. But, like, that person over there is maybe the funniest person in New York City right now.
Right.
And so, like, you start to just kind of – you start to get down on yourself because you just start to feel like nothing you do is good sometimes. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And do you feel like that time off helped you break that cycle for yourself?
That time off helped me grow up. Mm-hmm. that time off helped me, like, really assess what happened. I started, like, a practice group a couple months later that was for, like, a bunch of people who either had been cut before or had just, like, needed were feeling stale on their teams, and it was just, like, improv rehab. And started that, and then auditioned in the got cut in the fall, auditioned in the spring, and then made Lloyd Knight, and because Lloyd Knight was now around, the Beast opened on that time that I was on Harold.
So
Knight.
You were one of the first on one of the first Lloyd teams.
No, I was on, like, the third generation Lloyd team. Like,
okay.
I think there was two rounds before me.
Okay.
But then I was on First Lady, and
then
Revival. Yeah.
Yes. Mm-hmm. And how did things feel? Things feel different this time around?
On First Lady?
Just in general, now coming back and being on a team.
They did. The age gap was different. I was on a team now with people who were closer to a similar age and experience level to me. One, I had gotten older, and two, Lloyd Knight was allowing younger people to get on teams, which is great. And also, experience-wise, I got on the team with Jesse Lee, who had also been cut from Harold previously. So, like, we each were coming to it with kind of a similar place of... We've both been cut before. This is our second time around. We know what we're doing. Michael Hartney was put on First Lady, and it was his first improv team, but he had still been doing Maud Night and characters and being all around the most talented man ever, like, for years already, and then got on First Lady. Ali Kokesh and Sarah Burton wasn't on initially, but Andrew Yearman Glazer had been doing improv at the Magnet for a long time.
Mm-hmm.
Eric Gerson had been doing improv for a really long time. Like, it was a great team, and we all really enjoyed each other. Lou was added later. And it was just like, oh, these are people who I feel more similar to, and it wasn't like I wasn't starstruck looking at Oscar Magallanes because I'd seen him on Bastion for years.
Yeah,
and,
it sounds like you kind of stopped comparing yourself in a way, of like comedic worth, I guess.
Or, oh, for sure.
Or how far you're getting, or.
Mm-hmm. And also, like, it's humble. Like, I was a very cocky, brash. Like, I had made it from college, and then I got on teams very young,
right.
And I was like, I must be pretty hot shit. And then it's like, no, you're not. Like, shut up. And so I was very humbling to be off. And to have to just kind of face that of like, all right, there are this, like, this is something. It also causes you to be like, this is something that I love to do. I want to keep doing this.
Right. It makes you really, like, reevaluate
mm-hmm.
why you have a dog in this fight.
Right.
Oh, my God. I use that idiomatic expression correctly.
That's right.
It's one of my 2018 resolutions.
To use idioms correctly?
Just use them more often and correctly. Like, I'm really suave with the English language.
Uh-huh.
That's a sidebar, too.
No, it's great.
So now you're on Mermaids, and Mermaids is such a fun team.
Mm-hmm.
What is kind of your favorite thing to do that you love about improv?
About improv?
Let's say, like, you're about to do a show do a show. What's, like, your favorite thing to bring to life and to do?
So with Mermaids, the real joy of it is how well we know each other.
Uh-huh.
And, like, just the comfort level and the ease. That's something that I feel like young improvisers take for granted or don't experience because they're indie teaming, they're in classes, they're at jams.
Yes, they're worrying about something.
Right, like, to know that, like... playing, like, Betsy Kenny, I think, is so incredibly funny. And she's admittedly a bit, she's a wild card. She's an X Factor on stage. Like, I've played with her for 3.5 years now, and we were friends before that. And there still is no telling what she's going to say at any given time.
Right,
like,
right.
This week's practice,
it's like a fun surprise.
This week's practice, I was cry laughing at things Betsy Kenny was saying, because it seems, I just have no idea where, how her brain works or where it comes from. And what that amount of time of being together has allowed us is, like, I at least know that it's going to be like that. And I'm completely comfortable, and I want her to be like that, which is so great. It's so much fun to perform with Betsy because she brings that such a distinct and positive energy to every show.
Right.
And that's true for everybody. Like, Luke Field is like that. Morgan Miller, who's now on The Weeknd, is like that. And it's like all of these big energies, when you get to perform with each other for a length of time, you get comfortable with each other and you start to develop a sort of just sort of shorthand of, we know this is going to happen, and we're excited that it's going to happen. We want to make it happen. You know?
And where do you feel like, what's your natural energy or strength that you like to bring to the table too?
I think that it's different depending on the team that you're on. For Mermaids, I am for sure the person who, like, keeps things together and keeps things grounded. Like, it doesn't really matter what the premise of the scene, if I initiate or not. If I'm in a scene with Betsy, Betsy's going to become the unusual thing.
Right.
And that's okay. I want her to be. She's better at it than I am. Mm-hmm. And so, like,
it makes you, it's kind of like you're, well, you kind of take like a producer role, I guess.
A little bit.
Yeah.
I take for sure the role of, like, I provide base reality mm-hmm. to Mermaids, I think. I do a lot of other things, but, like, I for sure am somebody who in any given scene can be like, all right, here's what this is happening. I edit a lot on Mermaids. I keep track of the show.
Right. I feel the same way, too. I think a lot of people might know me for one kind of energy or style, mm-hmm. but depending on the group I'm in, like, I'm always the editor or always
right.
trying just kind of like timekeeper. And
but that's totally different. Like on Turco,
right.
It was completely different. Mm-hmm. Like I for sure would still provide base reality because I was playing with Andy Bastillos, who is an unstoppable force
so
of weirdness.
It's
so fun to watch. And so for him, it was always like, oh, I'm the straight man. I'm the normal person here and you're going to be the crazy one. But also on Turco, it's like it's 4 people performing instead of 8. So you have to add more to it. And so I was also, like, the person who initiated a lot or who remembered a lot from the interview or the person who would provide and, like, was keeping track of show energy of, like, if we've just had, like, a talky scene, maybe we want something that's more physical right now mm-hmm. and kind of keeping track of that stuff. I for sure am more of, like, a show architect than somebody who just, like, gets pointed
out. I think that kind of comes from your writing sensibilities, though, too,
mm-hmm.
in thinking about the bigger picture or – Like you said,
right.
the show architect, like where can we crescendo or what does the next part of the show need?
Yeah. I was the one on Turco who like wore a watch and like made sure that like as the half was ending that like we started to bring stuff back.
Right. Mm-hmm. And so how do you think improv influenced writing? Because I know you are you're also a big writer. I think you mm-hmm. also put together like a pilot writing
That's
class
right. yep.
as well.
So
I know a lot of people take improv with mm-hmm. the intention to either help writing or get started on writing, or sometimes it's vice versa.
Yeah.
What do you think?
I think improv, I've never really cracked like doing an improv scene and then taking that scene and turning it into a sketch. I think that's very difficult. Improv is very like context specific. Where I think that improv is helpful is because of my experience on stage and being different characters and just kind of understanding how actors talk and from acting itself, that is like undeniably useful for a writer. You start to learn how a scene can move and how like different tactics can be played and explored. You start to learn like what words are necessary and what words aren't necessary. Just a matter of like pace is useful. And also of, like, idea generation. As a sketch writer, like, you start to use that same amount of, pardon me, that same, like, kind of, like, brain power to inspire your scenes or to inspire your story or to, like, have something unexpected happen here because you can imagine it in your head of, like, you're on an improv stage.
Yeah. And I think it also, helps make, mm-hmm. helps write reactions in a real way.
It's also, like, improv is, it's therapeutic in a way of, like, you get to go on stage. That's what I love about improv is it doesn't matter what else is going on in my life, and I've done an improv show under pretty much any circumstance, like, right. or emotional stress
that
or whatever.
Happened just, like, moments before.
Yeah. Like, it's just like, yo, you go on stage, like, and then all of a sudden your brain just, like, turns off and the show happens. And then you get off stage and you're like, oh, wow, I didn't think about any of my problems for the last, if it's Harold Knight, 27 minutes, if it's a Torco show, 90 minutes. I didn't think about any of my problems while I was on stage. I was just in the show and present and there. And it's like, that's why I continue to do improv, is it's so much fun. That's the fun of it, is it turns your brain off, but also, like, helps you in a way, yeah.
And do you have any, like favorite memory improv moments?
Favorite memory improv moments.
Like, where you're like, oh, this is a seminal moment in my improv history. I'll always come back to this as, like, a cornerstone of what joy looks and feels like.
A lot of that, for me, I remember, like, Jordan Klepper was my first indie coach, and I took his, like, advanced study improv class. Mm-hmm. And so a lot of, like, working with him and being in that class was a lot of, like, there isn't a lot of wrong stuff that you can do. It's just a lot of, like, positive, do what you feel and the show will take care of itself. And a lot of working with Gethard, too. Gethard is an amazing, like, I'd say was, like, it's the past, he just doesn't coach that much anymore or teach that much anymore. But he is just the most amazing improv teacher. And so working with Parentheses and with my team, Jump on Three, who was coached by Don Finelli, but who Finelli was like working a lot with Gethard at the time. Finelli, in his own right, is also a great coach. But like a lot of that like early indie teaming is when I was like, wow, this is where we're trying unbelievable stuff, and it's very difficult, that like it really felt magical.
And what were the messages or like takeaway, either mantras or thoughts from either Gethard or Klepper, mm-hmm. in that time that you felt like was really beneficial for you as an improviser or helped ease calm or something? Not ease calm.
Right.
Yeah, ease anxiety.
For Jordan, he was big on like not forcing anything, of just like, whatever is happening is what's supposed to be happening. And also of Jordan comes from a Chicago background. And so, like, he wasn't making you focus on the game and hit, like, the game three times so much as he was, like, allowing you to see how things could be tied together thematically rather than just by, like, straight game. And then Gethard was all about, I mean, Parentheses was called The Destruction of the Arbitrary, the most a pretentious study of improv class or something like that. And mm-hmm. so mm-hmm. all he was trying to do was figure out, like, what are the constructs that we put up on improv that are unnecessary, that, like, aren't there. And so that's why the class was 27 people and the shows lasted for a full hour.
Yes.
And, like, the shows were still just as much fun and you could still work just as effectively with 27 people for the most part as you could with a team of 8 or a team of 10. Like, what he understood was there's a lot of stuff that we put up that we think is...
helps make good improv.
And it doesn't. And it's just, like, that's an arbitrary thing. It's arbitrary that we sweep at it. It's arbitrary that we stand and get a suggestion at the top of a show. It's... all of this stuff is arbitrary that, like, we have decided as a shorthand, but, like, doesn't necessarily have to exist for improv.
And I think that's really interesting based mm-hmm. off what you said earlier as someone who self-identifies as type A.
Right.
Having that takeaway that like, their main rules are there are no rules.
Right.
Kind of.
And also, like, whatever the show is happening that's right in front of you, that's the show that you should be doing. Like,
right.
for a while, early on, I would be like, well, this is what the game is supposed to be. And it's like, no, both of them were really great at, like, Gethard. In fact, I remember him calling me out for it, of somebody had made a move, and I walked over, and I corrected. The police officer said, like, hi, this is Gary. Like, you've called the police or whatever. And I walked over, and I went, like, made my awesome move of being like, hey, you're a police officer. Like, act professional. Say this is Officer Duncan. And Gethard stopped me, and he goes, hey, yes, you can call that out. Your scene partner made a mistake. But you can either choose to call that out and make him look foolish, or you can choose to make it part of the world and make it on purpose. And then I did it again later in class, and then he stopped me again, and he was like, I told you once already, like, stop calling people out and telling them that they're wrong. Make it part of the world. And ever since then, I've tried as hard as I could of, like, you can either – I think of it as, like, when you notice something that's unusual like that, you can either choose to call it out in a constructive way or a destructive way. And if you can choose to be constructive about it, like, and to make it part of the world and to make it true, I think that's always more useful for a show.
Yeah. I mean, I think that just gets back to our favorite maxim, mm-hmm. yes and, where,
yeah.
like – agreement is just so fun to watch. Mm-hmm. Agreement in a constructive way. There's like nothing more exciting than just like watching a group of people really agree.
And it's something that, like, having coached a lot, you get really frustrated watching people, especially people who are in classes and you're not sure, like, why are you doing this? Why are you here if you're not having fun doing this? Like, there's been a few instances where I've coached where I've had to, like, stop the group and be like, hey, you guys seem very in your heads about game. You seem very in your heads about doing improv right. And there is no way to do improv right. As long as you didn't plan it out beforehand, UCB has a theory on game, and that's a very specific approach to improv. But, like, it's not the only approach. And if you want me to note you for a Lloyd Knight pattern game, Harold, then, like, I'm going to use that as the metric for it. But if it's just a show, like, you didn't do anything wrong if you didn't play game in a scene. You just chose to have a meandering, more naturalistic scene.
Well, what do you have as advice for young improvisers who, I know a lot of people do get hung up on game and in mm-hmm. their head. I even remember when I was young. When I was so young, I'm ancient now.
Yeah, me too.
We're ancient, we're wrinkly, and we're
that is something that I have noticed is I started off and I was like the young punk on the house teams, and now I'm very much the old guy around.
I'm still eternally youthful.
You're still youthful.
Thank
you. You look great.
Thank you so mm-hmm. much. What advice do you have for young improvisers, especially when they begin to learn game? And what is, like, if you could look back at either your younger self learning game or mm-hmm. a young improviser now?
I think there's a time to really immerse yourself in improv and to be there every night and to be doing two shows a night and being in 10 practice groups and all of that. There's a time to really immerse yourself in it. Like, it's good. You get to learn. You get the pace of it in your bones. Going to festivals is great. Going to Del Close Marathon is great. Go to Del Close Marathon and watch 80 shows, you know. Don't go home. There's a time for that, and then there's also a time for relaxing and for resting that, as you were. If life is an improv scene, like, rest the game. Like, go do other things. Give yourself some time to take it in and to approach it. Like, you are all wound up on it, and game in general, like, it's tough. I don't know. As far as, like, finding game and whatnot, for me, what's easiest is to define game as, like, this is what I normally expect to be true. This is how this is different than that. Mm-hmm. And, like, if you want to in your everyday life, this is something that I did for a very long time and still probably do.
I know what you're going to say, and I do it too.
Of, like, oh, normally I would see this thing happen, but you're doing it like that. And then, like, that's my way of kind of defining game, I suppose.
Right, right. Because game is a behavior. And I think even, well, once I started taking improv and like seeing how it like meshed with real life, air quotes, it's like everyone is playing their own games constantly.
Yeah,
like,
super hard.
It's just like, it is human behavior. And, mm-hmm. You know, things can seem grounded or real, but it's just all dependent on context.
Well, and that's what I like. That's honestly, it's another thing I love about improv is improv has made me enjoy my everyday life a lot more. It's made me feel much more present in it.
Me too.
And just like I notice, a lot of times I would worry like, oh, if you study comedy, then you'll never laugh anymore.
Which is really, that's a real thought.
It's for sure a real thought. And like, yeah, for sure. Like, I can't watch a bad sitcom and laugh at it just as much as I would a great sitcom or anything like that. But in everyday life, I find myself noticing behaviors a lot more and appreciating behaviors a lot more and just kind of like being able to laugh at everyday life stuff and to laugh actually a lot more because I've studied improv and because I've enjoyed it. Yeah.
It's kind of like, I mean, that's exactly right. And I remember, mm-hmm. it's kind of like when I came from a graphic design background, and once I started learning about graphic design mm-hmm. and like noticing, you know, like good type, like really well executed typography or understanding why a visual message is constructed this way or what they're trying to communicate.
Right.
I was like, oh my God, I'm going, like, you realize this world is littered with mm-hmm. a bad design.
And not only that, but like you can understand why something is insane.
Right. And you're like, oh man, I'll never enjoy this visual world again.
Right.
But it just increases your awareness about things and mm-hmm. see things in a different way.
The other thing I would say to young improv students is, like, stop worrying about being funny. Don't mm-hmm. make the funny choice. Stop making the funny choice. Make the choice that seems honest to you. Make the choice that seems personal to you. go, like, whoever your favorite performers are, go watch them. How often are they playing a big, goofy, wacky character? And it's, like, kind of never, right? And so, like, get comfortable. Like, in improv, we want to see you, and we want to see you be very specifically you. And that's something that I feel like I've struggled with personally is, like, because I was just trying to be Mr. Comedy for so long, mm-hmm. I didn't really know, like, oh, what are my opinions? What are the things that I believe and the things that I like and all of that? Other than you can't really get on stage in an improv show and be like, man, Arrested Development's pretty great, right?
Right. Mm-hmm. And how do you think, so when people are trying to, I think people hear that a lot, like, just be yourself.
Yeah.
But then also when you start improv, you go to a lot of shows and you see a lot of people like, oh, I want to be like that improviser.
Yeah.
Or like, I want to do improv the way they do that.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes it can be confusing for people.
Yeah.
Because they're trying to, because they want to, I mean, you, just like when you learn anything, you want to emulate people who you think are great.
Yeah. Oh, man, yeah, I know exactly what you mean.
Yeah.
For so long, I was like that. And probably am still like that to some degree. But, like, I would say just trust that you are enough, I guess. Like, that's something that I also have
You are enough. You heard it from Matt Starr.
Yeah, I don't know. Like, your experience is enough. It is weird. Yeah. You might not think it is because it's your experience, but, like, yeah, just trust that you'll be enough rather than having to add a whole bunch of other bells and whistles to it.
And I think that is, I think that really what makes a successful improv scene when you really are coming from a place of truth, mm-hmm. right?
Yeah. I also think, like, the more that you can build and, like, build together rather than, like, bringing your own ideas or trying to impress and have the cleverest idea and whatnot, that to me is something that I had to work on a lot.
Not being clever?
Yeah, not worrying so much about being clever or punny or having the best, like, joke for the moment, but just, like, being in the person in the scene the way that they would be like that.
Is there anything about improv that you really don't like? Or, like, that coming up you really just didn't like? I know you are a devout student of comedy.
For sure.
And of improv. But is there anything that you're just like, oh, I would really rather not do this?
That's a good question. I really can't stand to watch a team where somebody is trying to prove that they don't care on stage.
Oh, it's the worst.
I really can't. Yeah. I really can't abide that. Or is like doing it and trying to like just show like to kind of like wink at like we're doing an improv show and this is how improv works, so we're going to like make it laughably bad.
Like the detachment, right?
Yeah. I suppose, yeah.
Well, is that what you're talking about or is that a little different?
I mean, detachment even, like, this would be even, like, on a more, not so much, like, in the scene of, like, oh, I'm a character who doesn't care, of, like, I'm a person who's on stage for some reason doing improv and I'm saying that I don't care about it.
Yeah.
Which you see surprisingly
a
lot.
It's a head-scratcher.
As far as, like, being in an improv show, I'm up for pretty much anything. There was for sure a time where I was, like, I've done so much organic improv and so much, like, improv that's, like, discovery that it's, like, it's so much work and it can be – and unless it's done perfectly and, like, the team is very supportive, which I've been very lucky to do shows like that. But, like, if that show goes wrong at the top or if the audience isn't 100% on board and a UCB audience, then it's very alienating and you feel – you can really feel that and it's hard to get them back, I suppose.
Mm-hmm. And
– I also never want to do any improv – well – and I would still do it. Doing improv shows for high school students is very hard.
Oh, high school students in general just scare me.
Yeah,
teenagers.
They should. They're a terrifying audience.
Teenagers are scary.
Mm-hmm.
Not because they're... No, I'm scared of teenagers. Groups of teens.
Yeah.
they're hard to please.
There's something that happens from high school to college where a high schooler, you can talk to one of them and you can do an improv scene about their life. And they'll laugh as long as what you're doing is similar to their life.
Yeah.
But then as soon as you, like, heighten it out of reality, they all, like, fold their arms and they go, like, my life's not like that. You don't get me.
Oh, my God. And that is why I love to do improv scenes as high schooler. I'll never get tired of doing that.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, you've worked with a lot of different people and a mm-hmm. lot of different teams and personalities. How would you advise people who are maybe starting indie teams or working with people when you start to notice that, like, personalities start to become... get in the way of improv too. Either they permeate themselves on stage, and it's hard to like because in improv we're always like we want to support the team, we want to always say yes to our teammates, but yet sometimes it's hard because you feel like someone is just on a totally different wavelength, whether on stage or off stage.
Right. So I think if it's a comedic wavelength that you guys are different, it's your job to figure out how you can work with them. That's what being a professional comedian is you're going to work with people who think different things are funnier than you. That's what it's like being in a writer's room. That's what it's like performing with somebody else. I feel like it's part of our job as improvisers to learn, rather than being like, they're difficult, I can't work with them, figuring out, like, that's what makes you a great improviser is if you can figure out a way to make them look great. That said, if you're a young person on an indie team and somebody's making you uncomfortable on that indie team for personal reasons or misogynistic reasons or anything like that, get them out. Get them out of there. There's absolutely no excuse for anybody to do improv with somebody who makes them uncomfortable.
Right, right. And then, I mean, sometimes it's more just more nuanced. Like, sometimes people are just negative. Mm-hmm. And sometimes we're really hard on ourselves, right? We can be our own worst critics, too.
Yeah, I think that's like in college. So it's funny. Brady O'Callaghan and I went to college together. Brady and I have known each other for a very long time, and now we're on Mermaids together, which is pretty great. But like, it really—I mean, it is weird when you like are doing the thing that you talked about when you were drunk on a college port. You know, like on a college.
I don't know.
Deck.
I've never been drunk, Matt.
You've never been drunk?
Just kidding. Man,
you got me.
I got you.
But yeah, like it's crazy to think, like he and I have this shorthand where like in college we would note each other because there was no coach.
Right.
But now it's like, one, neither one of us really feels the need to note each other after a show. And two, but like knowing people are hard enough on themselves. If you are feeling like it's your job to really point out to people how they screwed up, you're not doing anybody any favors, you know? Like that's always been my philosophy as a coach as well. It's like people don't need convincing that they're bad at things.
Right.
People need convincing that they're good at things and to point out that they're good at them. And so, like, yes, point out what they did wrong, but also, like, you don't need to – I've never agreed with people who are, like, trying to break people down so they can build them back up. That's never been – as an athlete, that was never what the coaches did that I loved. As a performer, that's never been the way that I have tried to behave of, like – I'm going to break you down. I'm going to point out so that you are like, this isn't whiplash. You're not in this. Like, you're not.
Right.
Nobody's going to benefit from that. Be the person on the team who people want to perform with. Be the person on the team who's supportive of each other, of everybody there. Figure out, like, if somebody's not stepping out with, if your team's not stepping out with a certain person, figure out, like, they must be funny in some way.
Yeah.
It's your job to figure out how.
Yeah. And I think trust that, you know, be the kind of performer, you know, yeah, be that, the kind of performer, you know, you want to be, and you're the best person or self that you want to be, and then you'll also attract the same kind of people to you as well.
I think so. I think that's true, yeah. I want to give a quick shout out to the St. Louis Rams.
Thank you.
They're running the indie showcase. They're doing really great. I want to give a shout out to Alex Starbuck, Brielle Demergian, Matt Chapp, Jen Staven. Oh my gosh, I'm going to screw this up. Who else is on the St. Louis Rams? All right, Julian Darmani, of course.
Right.
Yeah. Carly Earl, when she shows up to practice, Carly.
I love all these people. All these people are fantastic.
If you get a chance, if you're in classes or if you're on indie teams, go watch, like, of course, go to Herald Night, of course, go watch Lloyd, but go support the indie team showcase that the St. Louis Rams run. That's where you get to meet other people who are doing the same things that you're doing, and you get to support the indie scene.
Yes.
And that's all of my friends that I work with now. I have been lucky enough to be on house teams with them, but like this is where that's the benefit of UCB is it's a great training center, of course, and you get to do the shows, but the people that you get to meet and work with here are really better than you'll find. Like that's why we're all here. That's why we do this. Go see those
community
shows. I feel like I'm forgetting somebody. Oh, Teo Yang is on St. Louis.
Mostly
Rams.
Teo.
Yeah. Mostly Teo, yeah.
It's a community. The indie scene is where you can let your hair down and have fun.
But go to those shows. I know that they're late at night, and I know that like they don't have Connor Ratliff in them or whoever you guys are after.
Matt, they don't have Connor Ratliff in them.
I'm sure, they don't. But like go watch other indie teams perform. You'll make friends, and you'll find new places to perform because of it.
Yes, that's so great. Mm-hmm. And that was Long Form Conversation. Tune in next episode when Matt Starr will be your very own next host. Thank you so much for listening, and take care.
Great job, John. Great job.
Thank you!
You've been listening to the UCB Long Form Conversations podcast on the UCB Comedy Podcast Network. If you like this podcast, please subscribe and review at itunes.com/UCB Comedy. The opinions expressed in this episode are those of the comedians talking and don't necessarily reflect the opinions of UCB Theater or Training Center. Find cutting-edge comedy videos on YouTube and Vimeo at UCB Comedy. Find our live shows at UCBtheater.com and connect with us on social media at UCB Comedy.